Imagine a world where prisons don't exist. This thought experiment feels almost impossible for most of us. Prisons seem as inevitable as hospitals or schools. Yet Angela Davis's "Are Prisons Obsolete?" challenges this very assumption. Since its 2003 publication, this slim but powerful volume has become foundational to the prison abolition movement, influencing generations of activists and scholars. Davis, who spent 16 months as a political prisoner before being acquitted of all charges in 1972, brings both personal experience and scholarly rigor to her analysis. What makes this work so compelling is how it forces us to question something we've been conditioned to accept as natural and necessary, the prison itself. We paradoxically take prisons for granted while fearing their reality. When prison abolition movements began in the late 1960s, about 200,000 Americans were incarcerated. Today, that number exceeds 2 million, over 20% of the world's prisoners, despite America having less than 5% of global population. This expansion accelerated during the Reagan era through tough-on-crime policies, despite minimal impact on crime rates. The war on drugs, mandatory minimums, and three strikes laws swelled prison populations dramatically. California exemplifies this trend. After building 9 prisons between 1852-1955, the state opened 9 more in just the 1980s, with 12 more following in the 1990s. Media representation has normalized incarceration as inevitable. Racial disparities remain severe. By the 1990s, 1/3 of Black men aged 20-29 were under criminal justice supervision. Prisons function as repositories for undesirables, allowing society to avoid addressing community issues while corporations profit from prisoner management. This privatization has transformed incarceration into a profitable industry with powerful lobbying interests, entrenching the system while masking social inequalities. The prison system evolved directly from slavery through Jim Crow to mass incarceration. Despite slavery's legal abolition, white supremacy persisted through refined institutional methods. Former slave states quickly enacted black codes criminalizing ordinary behaviors when performed by black people. The 13th Amendment's exception clause, allowing slavery as punishment for crime, provided constitutional foundation for a new form of bondage. Alabama's prison demographics tell the story. Before emancipation, 99% of prisoners were white. Shortly after the Civil War, the population became overwhelmingly black. The convict lease system emerged as slavery's brutal successor, combining economic exploitation with racial control. Unlike slave owners, convict lessees had no incentive to preserve their workers. By 1888, every able-bodied male prisoner in Alabama was leased to mining companies. This forced labor built the South's infrastructure, Georgia's railroads, Atlanta's Peachtree Street, and Birmingham's industrial complex. Today's prison privatization mirrors this system by creating financial incentives for expanded incarceration, disproportionately targeting black communities, and perpetuating historical patterns of disenfranchisement. Ironically, the prison began as a reform movement. Before standardized prisons, punishment was public spectacle, executions and torture meant to affect spectators more than the punished. These displays often became carnival-like events rather than deterrents. Reformers argued that isolated punishment would reform lawbreakers instead of exacting revenge. They believed solitude with labor and religious instruction would lead to spiritual transformation, shifting from public spectacle to private reformation. The term penitentiary emerged in 1758 England for penitent prostitutes seeking redemption through prayer and work. Bentham's Panopticon featured a circular prison where inmates could be constantly observed by unseen guards. Psychology aligned with industrial capitalism's need for self-disciplined workers. America developed two competing models, the Pennsylvania system of total isolation and the Auburn model, allowing group labor under strict silence. Dickens's 1842 visit produced a scathing critique, condemning solitary confinement as immeasurably worse than any torture of the body. Today's supermax prisons echo historical penitentiaries but abandon rehabilitative pretenses, making no claims of respecting rights while justifying harsh conditions for the worst of the worst, often reflecting racial and social biases more than behavior. Women comprise only 5% of global prison populations, yet represent the fastest-growing demographic in U.S. prisons. Since the late 18th century, female criminality has been portrayed as more threatening and aberrant than male criminality, considered relatively normal. 19th-century Quaker reformers established separate women's prisons, believing fallen women could be redeemed through domestic training, ultimately creating systems that funneled poor and Black women into service jobs after release. Black and Native American women faced heightened challenges, often segregated or sent to men's prisons. In post-Civil War Southern states, Black women endured the brutal convict lease system without feminized punishment protections. Today's women's prisons increasingly mirror men's facilities. Reforms have ironically adopted separate but equal approaches that sometimes impose harsher conditions in the name of gender equality, including weapons and chain gangs in Alabama and Arizona. Sexual abuse has become institutionalized, with Human Rights Watch documenting male officers routinely assaulting female prisoners. The criminalization of Black and Latina women involves hyper-sexualized stereotypes that justify abuse, with practices like unnecessary exams and strip searches functioning as state-sanctioned sexual assault. The prison industrial complex connects corporations, government agencies, correctional communities, and media outlets. Prison population growth stems from systemic racism and profit motives rather than rising crime rates. After the Cold War, defense companies like Westinghouse and 3M shifted to prison security systems. Military technologies, surveillance systems, night vision, riot control gear found new applications in corrections. Prisoners have long been exploited for profit. Post-World War II, medical experimentation accelerated pharmaceutical development. At Holmesburg Prison, Dr. Albert Kligman conducted hundreds of experiments, viewing inmates as acres of skin for dermatological research. Major corporations benefited until federal regulations prohibited using prisoners as research subjects in 1974. The 1980s prison expansion coincided with deindustrialization and welfare cuts. As factories closed, prisons managed this human surplus. Politicians justified harsh sentencing by stoking crime fears despite falling crime rates. Private prison corporations like CoreCivic and GEO Group dominate the market, while companies from Dial Soap to AT&T profit from correctional facilities, creating powerful incentives to maintain high imprisonment rates. Abolition demands alternatives beyond prison-like substitutes. We need transformed schools, revitalized education, free healthcare, and justice based on reparation rather than retribution. Decriminalizing drug use is central to abolitionist thinking, alongside developing community-based treatment programs. This approach should extend to sex work and immigration, challenging detention systems. Organizations worldwide offer alternative models, from conflict resolution to restorative justice. Herman Bianchi suggests replacing criminal law with reparative law, where the lawbreaker is thus no longer an evil-minded person, but simply a debtor whose human duty is to take responsibility for their acts. Creating alternatives requires breaking the conceptual link between crime and punishment, recognizing imprisonment isn't inevitable, but tied to political agendas, profits, media, and racial structures. The Amy Beale case demonstrates restorative justice's power. After Beale's death in South Africa, her parents supported amnesty for the convicted men and later hired two at her foundation, illustrating justice as healing rather than retribution. Just as previous generations couldn't imagine life without slavery, many today cannot envision society without prisons. Yet history shows seemingly permanent institutions can be dismantled through sustained resistance and collective reimagining.